Thank you. So thank you everyone for coming to this session. So I'll be talking about fast byte granularity software fault isolation. And this is joint work with Miguel Castro, Jean-Philippe Martin, Marcus Peinado, Pericles Akritidis, Austin Donnelly, Paul Barham, and Richard Black at Microsoft Research Cambridge. So the problem that we're addressing here is kind of old. Basically, the problem is that operating systems run many drivers. And most drivers are fully trusted. They run in the kernel, they can write anywhere, they can do anything. And so driver bugs cause serious problems, like data corruption, crashes, security breaches. So in fact, driver bugs are a major cause of unreliability in operating systems. So previous systems that tried to address this problem, such as user-level drivers, hardware fault isolation, software fault isolation, writing drivers in safe languages, have at least one of these problems. They require changes to the driver source code, or they require changes to hardware, or if they don't, then they have poor performance or provide weak isolation. So why is this? Why is this problem hard? Why hasn't the problem been solved? So if drivers didn't share any memory with the kernel, then sandboxing them would be very easy. But the problem is that existing drivers, they need to use very complex kernel APIs. And because of this, they have very fine-grained spatial and temporal sharing of memory with the kernel. So it's very common for a driver to allocate some bytes on its stack, then pass a pointer to those bytes to the kernel. The kernel may write to those bytes, or the driver may receive a pointer to a kernel object, and the driver should be allowed to to write to just a few fields in the object, but not others. So it's this fine-grained sharing that makes things hard. And any incorrect sharing across these complex kernel APIs may cause the kernel to write anywhere or execute arbitrary code. So we're addressing this problem with BGI, byte granularity isolation. BGI isolates drivers in separate protection domains, but allows domains to share the same address space, the kernel address space. BGI uses byte granularity memory protection with several new types of memory access rights. And it can grant and revoke these memory access rights precisely at byte granularity and quickly. It can also check accesses efficiently. So using this mechanism, BGI can provide strong isolation even for existing drivers that use complex kernel APIs. BGI provides write integrity. It prevents drivers from writing to memory that they shouldn't write to. It also enforces control flow integrity. It prevents drivers from making bad control flow transfers. And it also enforces a form of type safety for kernel objects that prevents many incorrect uses of the kernel API. And we can do this without changing the driver source code or changing the hardware and with low overhead. We measured an average increase in CPU time of about 6%, and the space overhead is about 12%. So for the rest of the talk, I'll start with an overview of BGI. Then I'll describe the BGI protection model. Then I'll go into some implementation details, and I'll conclude with some results. So the two main components in BGI are the BGI compiler and the BGI interposition library. So to build a BGI driver, we start with the unmodified driver source code. We compile it with the BGI compiler to get an instrumented driver. Then we link it with the BGI interposition library, and we get the BGI driver. This BGI driver can then run in the kernel address space alongside the kernel and potentially alongside other uninstrumented drivers. But all the communication between the driver and the kernel is going to be mediated by the interposition library. So the instrumentation inserted by the compiler and the interposition library are going to enforce the BGI protection model. So what is this protection model? So BGI partitions code into different protection domains. The kernel runs in a trusted protection domain. We trust the kernel. And some uninstrumented drivers may also run in this domain. Most drivers, though, run in untrusted domains, and drivers may also share these domains. Now, each byte of virtual memory in BGI has an ECL, an access control list. And the ECL simply lists the domains, the ECL for a byte simply lists the domains and the access rights that the domains have for that byte. So what are these access rights that the domains may have? Well, BGI uses different types of memory access rights. We have the traditional read and write, and by default, everything is readable. BGI doesn't restrict reads. But we have also an iCall write, an indirect call write, which grants the right to transfer control indirectly to some memory address. And we have different type rights for each type of kernel object, like an IO object, or a dispatcher object, or a mutex. And these grant the right to use a memory area and as an object of a certain type. So they allow the driver to pass pointers to these objects in kernel calls that expect arguments of that type. And finally, we have ownership rights that allow the driver to free memory. So to manipulate these rights, we have just two primitives. Check write that checks if a driver has a given write for a byte range, and set write that grants a given write for a byte range. To revoke writes, we just reset them to read only. Now, these primitives are called by the BGI interposition library, or they are inserted by the compiler. So the driver cannot call these primitives directly. So remember, we're compiling the driver, so we can enforce this. We have two variants of these primitives that we use to do a form of dynamic type checking. They're called setType and checkType, and setType simply marks an address as the start of an object of a given type and prevents writes to the object. So this is the same as granting the appropriate type write on the first byte of the object and setting all the other bytes to read only. And we also have the checkType that checks if an address is the start of an object of a given type. So this is the same as checking if the driver has the appropriate type write on the first byte of the object. So these primitives are just like sequences of set write and check write, but we have specific optimizations for them. So using these two primitives, we're going to check the arguments used in kernel API calls with a form of dynamic type state checking. And this will allow us not only to check that objects can be used if they have the correct type, but we can also control when objects can be used, because we can set the type when the objects are in an appropriate state. And I'll show an example of this later on. So the BGI compiler uses these primitives to check writes on writes and indirect calls, and it also grants and revokes writes and revokes write access to the stack. So when a function gets called, the instrumentation inserted by the compiler grants write access to the new stack frame. When the function exits, the write is revoked. The compiler also records a list of address taken functions to be used on driver load. So when the driver loads, the interposition library grants iCall writes to the functions in this list. And it also grants write access to globals in the driver. Then, as the driver makes kernel calls, the library grants and revokes access rights. So in a typical case, the driver will receive a kernel object, and the library will grant the appropriate type write for that object, and will also potentially grant write access to some fields in the object. Then, as the driver makes calls, these writes may be revoked according to the call semantics. Finally, the interposition library also checks writes for function arguments. So it checks if the arguments have the correct type, and in many cases, also the driver is going to pass pointers to the kernel, to some memory area that the kernel then writes to, and the library also checks that the driver has write access to these memory areas. So let's see how all of this works with a simple example. So the example here is a driver function that processes a read request, and we're just going to concentrate on a simple sequence of calls that uses a kernel event object. So you can see here that the function allocates a kernel event object on the driver stack, then initializes the event, and then waits on the event. So what can go wrong here? Well, the driver may pass a corrupted pointer to the kernel on the initialized function, for instance. And if that happens, then the kernel will be writing potentially to an arbitrary place. Another bad thing that may happen is that the driver forgets to initialize the kernel event object. And then when it waits on the event, the kernel is going to be using uninitialized memory, and so the kernel may, again, write anywhere or execute arbitrary code. The final bad thing that may happen is that the driver may be writing to the event object at the same time as the kernel is using it. And again, this can result in arbitrary behavior. So let's look at how BGI prevents this. So to see this, we're going to look into the implementation of the interposition library wrapper for the initialize function. So you can see that the first thing the wrapper does is to check if the driver has write access to the event object. So normally this check will succeed because remember that the compiler inserted instrumentation to grant access to the stack frame when the function is called. So normally the check will succeed, but in the case where the driver is passing a corrupted pointer, the check will fail and we will catch the error there. So if the check succeeds, the driver, the library wrapper then calls, then grants the appropriate type write for the kernel event object, and this prevents further writes to the event object. So this means that we also catch the error where the driver would write to the object after this initialization function, potentially at the same time as the kernel is using the event object. The final thing that the wrapper does is to call the normal kernel initialize function for the event. So later on, when the driver calls the wait function, the wrapper for the wait is going to check if the driver has the appropriate type write for the event object. So normally the check will succeed because the write was granted by the initialize function. But if the driver writer forgot to call the initialize function, the check will fail and we will also catch the error here. So you can see that we catch all of the three errors that I was talking about. So all of these examples are examples of checks that we implement in the interposition library, but the compiler also inserts inline checks. So you can see here that the driver at some later point is going to write to a buffer, and the compiler inserts an inline check to see if the driver has write access to the buffer. So if the driver had, let's say, a buffer overflow here, we would also catch the error with this check. So you can see here that the writes that the driver has are changing as the driver makes kernel calls. So BGI can enforce these type state rules, such as the event should not be used before it is initialized, and the driver should not write to the event after it is initialized, but after it is initialized, it can pass it in other kernel calls that expect events. So this is a simple example, but BGI can enforce many rules in this kernel complex kernel APIs. So it's great that we can enforce all of these safety properties, but of course the implementation also needs to be fast. Otherwise, no one is going to use this. So BGI is fast because it has fast crossing of protection domains. It's just crossing a protection domain is just a normal call instruction. It requires no changes to page protections, no separate heaps or stacks, and no copies of objects. BGI also can also grant and revoke and check writes efficiently using fast data structures and fast code sequences. And we rely on some compiler support to inline these checks and to do data alignment. And there's also a careful choice of checks and guarantees here. Not restricting reads is important to get low overhead. So I'm now going to go into some implementation details. And I'll start with the data structures that we use to represent ACLs. So BGI encodes a pair of a domain and a write as a dwrite, a number, an integer. And BGI uses several dwrites tables, one kernel table to cover the kernel address space and one user table to cover per process to cover user address spaces because drivers may write directly to user address space. These tables are arrays for efficient access, and they store one byte dwrite for each 8-byte memory slot. So they're optimized for the case when all the 8 bytes in the slot have the same ACL, and the ACL has one element. We have extra conflict tables to handle the general case, and they're just split trees with lists of arrays of 8 dwrites, one for each byte in a slot, but they're rarely used. So let me show you an example of how this works. So we can see here two 8-byte memory slots, and we can see that domain one has write access to the top slot. So we encode that as a dwrite 12, a number, and we store that dwrite on the table kernel writes table entry for that 8-byte slot. You can also see that the 8-byte slot at the bottom is actually shared by two domains, domain one and domain two. And domain 1 has write access to the first 2 bytes. Domain 2 has write access to the bottom 4 bytes. So we have a special conflict value in the writes table for that case that tells us that we need to look up a conflict table entry. And the conflict table entry is just a list of arrays of 8D writes. In this case, we have an array for domain 1 and an array for domain 2. And in the array for domain 1, we record that the domain 1 has write access to the first 2 bytes, and for domain 2 that it has write access to the bottom 4 bytes. So clearly, it's important to avoid accesses to these conflict tables. And the BGI compiler helps here by aligning data. The compiler lays out globals and locals on 8-byte memory slots, and it also 8-byte aligns fields in driver local structs. So this makes it common, the case where all the 8 bytes in a slot will share the same ECL. Heap objects are 8-byte aligned for the same reason. We also have special D writes for writable half slots of 4 bytes. And it's interesting that also not restricting read accesses has an important effect here, because it makes it more likely that the ECLs have a single element and we don't need conflict information. Now, having these fast data structures is important to get good performance, but it's also important to have fast code sequences. So I'm showing here an implementation for a common call to set write. And you can see that it's just 4 assembly instructions. The first 3 compute an entry in a writes table in the kernel or user space, and the bottom instruction just stores a D write. So in this case, we're storing 4 D writes because we're granting write access to a 32-byte slot. Now, what's perhaps interesting about this code sequence is that it works both for kernel and user space addresses. You can see in the figure that we've placed the kernel writes table near the top of the kernel address space and the user writes table near the bottom of the user address space. So by shifting the address by 3, we're computing an index into one of these tables, but we still need to add the base of the table. And because we're using an arithmetic shift and a bit complement instruction, we can get we can add the base of the table. You can see that here. So if the address is in kernel space, after the shift arithmetic instruction, we will have all ones in the 4 most significant bits of the address, and all zeros if it's a user mode address. Then by toggling the 4th most significant bit, we get the base of the kernel or user space table. So the main point here is that this is a compact and fast code sequence. We also have a fast code sequence for checking writes, and it starts just by computing a writes table entry as in the previous example, and then we just do a fast check where we read a D write from a D write table, and if the check succeeds, then we do, in this case, a normal write to memory that you can see at the bottom. If the fast check fails, then we have a slow check where we have to look up information in the conflict tables. Note that these checks, the check and the access are not atomic, but this gives us improved performance with little coverage loss. So this concludes the sort of the implementation details that I wanted to talk about. And I'll just mention now briefly that BGI also has a recovery mechanism. BGI runs the driver code inside exception handling blocks. And when a check fails, it raises an exception. Then the driver stops servicing requests. And we scan the writes tables to release resources held by the driver. Then we unload and restart the driver. OK, so how did we evaluate all of this? Well, we tested 16 Windows Vista device drivers that use a mix of complex kernel APIs. And these include drivers for network cards, disk drivers, USB drivers, and the file system, the FAT file system. All in all, this was more than 400,000 lines of code. And we measured the BGI's ability to contain faults and also the performance overhead. So the first thing we did was to inject faults in the source of the FAT file system and the Intel Pro network card. So the faults that we inserted follow previous bug studies. They are things like incorrect boundary conditions, missing assignments, and so on. And then we measured the BGI's ability to contain faults that caused the system to crash outside the driver. So this is the typical case where, you know, a bug in the driver causes some kernel corruption, and at some later point in a completely unrelated place, the kernel crashes. So BGI contained 161 out of 163 of these faults. The two faults that it didn't contain were caused by bugs in another driver. So this shows that BGI can contain common faults. To measure performance, we ran the postmark file system benchmark, and we measured throughput and CPU time with a combination of different device drivers, the disk device drivers, the RAM disk, the FAT file system, and the USB device drivers while accessing a flash drive. We can see that in the maximum CPU overhead was 10% for FAT, and the maximum decrease in throughput was around 12% again for FAT. For all the other cases, the overhead was below 5%, so the overhead was low in all cases. We also measured the performance with a 10 gigabit network card. We measured throughput and CPU time, and we can see that the maximum CPU overhead was 16% when sending small UDP messages, and the largest decrease in throughput was again 10%, again for the same case, sending small UDP messages. So the overhead was again low in all cases. The final thing that we did was to run existing test suites on some of our test drivers, and BGI found 20 new bugs in these drivers that are widely used in Windows. Some of the bug types, some of the bugs that we found were serious. They were incorrect writes, writes to incorrect places, or uses of invalid objects. Other of the bugs were less serious. There were things like abstraction violations, where the driver was writing to some place in kernel objects that shouldn't really be directly writable by drivers. But in total, we found 28 new bugs, and this also shows that BGI is a good bug-finding tool. So in conclusion, we believe that BGI improves the reliability and security of operating systems. It isolates drivers with low overhead. It can find bugs during testing or diagnostics, and it can contain faults during production. We believe the overhead is low enough to use it during production. So BGI can prevent system corruption, it can prevent attackers from gaining complete control of a system, and it can also recover faulty domains. So I'll stop here, thank you, and I'll take any questions. So we basically the granting we grant these access rights according to the semantics of the kernel API, and the properties that we can enforce there are the ones that I listed at the beginning. It's basically this write integrity. We can enforce that the driver shouldn't write to places where it doesn't have write access. So You may, this doesn't cover everything. If you have two writable areas, by the driver, and the driver thinks that he's writing to some place, but it's actually writing to another place that is also writable by the same driver, we wouldn't catch that, for instance.
One particular case in drivers is you have pointer packages that give you many type and no pointers. So how do you enforce the type safety of these pointers?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that one?
Many drivers have pointer arithmetic. So the compiler, as far as I know, that many compilers have to say these pointers are type unknown, which means that you don't have many information to conclude that which type are these pointers actually.
No, if the driver has typical cases of pointer arithmetic are like the buffer that I had in the example, where you're really accessing data, and we can catch those types of errors. cases where the driver is passing pointers that should point to kernel objects, but they have been corrupted. We're checking those. Typically don't have pointer arithmetic. So you receive a pointer to a kernel object, and then you may use that pointer, in other calls. But you're not going to do arithmetic on that pointer. But if you are using a pointer that you shouldn't use, that you didn't receive from the kernel, we always catch that.
Quick two-part question over here. One is, it's a very interesting paper. Comparing your work to the SFI work that was done 10, 15 years ago, that was done on already compiled code, and so the compiler wasn't part of the trusted computing interface. Mm-hmm. Is there any reason, looking at the transformation sequence, I can't see a reason why this couldn't be done on object code rather than source code.
Not really. I mean, we actually have an implementation that works on binaries, but for the paper we decided to report on the compiler version because it has a little bit better performance.
Okay. The second part is looking at the performance numbers in the paper. You list the overhead as being much lower than previous SFI implementations. But looking at the transformations you do, it doesn't seem like the transformations are all that different. So
I think the fundamental difference here regarding previous software fault isolation work is that we're dealing with this complex kernel API, and we're enforcing the sharing rules of this very fine-grained sharing that exists on these existing kernel APIs. Previous work that tried to enforce isolation for existing device drivers has to do things like copying objects, for instance, or have more expensive crossing of protection domains. And those are things that we don't have to do here, so we have better performance. But I think that the main difference is that we can handle these complex sharing across these existing kernel APIs in an efficient way. Well, I think the goal that we set for ourselves here, you may argue with the goal, but the goal that we set for ourselves here was to support existing drivers that run in existing operating systems with good performance, and that's something that those mechanisms cannot do. That's an interesting research question. But so far, I don't know of any way to make that work for existing drivers. You may argue that if you're designing a new system, then perhaps you should do it differently. And yes, but the goal of this work was really to support existing drivers using these existing interfaces with good performance.
So, Rick Spillane from Stanford University. So, have you looked at the, it was in Hot Security this year, there was a paper on using latent compiler inserted checks to prevent, or at least deter, zero-day exploits. And the idea was is you make these checks latent, and then you can just turn off whole swatches of checks in your code and not actually run the checks. And only when the mothership in Redmond or in Mountain View finds an error, rather than posting a warning, they can actually send out a signal to clients tell them to turn on the necessary checks to prevent that exploit from doing evil things to you. Mm-hmm.
I think that's a perfectly good idea, and in fact, it's, you know, one of the things that one of the applications that, you know, we've discussed with people in Windows, and it's a perfectly, you know, fine use of these techniques. But, you know, I think there is a lot of value, you know, with for when you run this all when you run this all the time in the deployed systems, because you can find, you know, many bugs in deployed systems. Some of those would be exploitable by attackers, others wouldn't. But from, you know, a reliability point of view, it's, you know, good to find those bugs. So I would argue for, you know, having it on all the time.
Thank you.